Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Today, we'll talk about my best Disney World planning advice. That's coming up on this episode 104 of WW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert from WWPrepSchool.com. Thank you so much for being here for episode 104. I am thrilled at the response from the last episode, which was a bonus in between the main episodes, because I just felt like I needed to put out the special touching moments from D23. I promise this one will be tear-free, but I do appreciate that you all enjoyed that one as much as I did. I did have a couple of questions come up about the last two podcast episodes. One was the outro song I played on the last one, which was "When Can I See You Again?" That is an Owl City song from the movie Wreck-It Ralph, and it also plays at the end of the Paint the Night Parade at Disneyland. I actually did say that in my first version of the podcast, but when I re-recorded a couple minutes because I was too emotional for my own comfort, I forgot to say that the second time. So that song, which has become one of my favorites, that now that you've heard that, many of you liked it, now you know what it's called and where to get it. I also wanted to clarify that when Casey and I talked about D23, we mentioned that the new Soarin' is going to be called Soarin' Over the Horizon, I think it was, but it's actually Soarin' Around the World. And that was a bit of a confusion at D23 because they use both terms, but the actual name is going to be Soarin' Around the World. So now that we have fully covered D23, we can sort of dive into some other things. Now, at the beginning of podcasts, I often say to follow me on social media, which I still recommend, and I still love it when you all do that. But the thing that seems to be missing is that people are following me on social media and then asking me questions that are on the website. So the way that this is structured is not podcast to social media. It really is everything should be pointing back to the website because that's where most of the work is. My posts on the site take an average of 12 hours to write. So that's where all the information is gathered. I've even spent up to 40 hours writing one single blog post. So if you have a question, my best suggestion is to use the search box at the top of the site, type in what you're looking for, and see if something has already been answered. There's an article that already answers your question. And if you're still having trouble, feel free to ask on social media, feel free to email, and then my assistant or I will reply. But I just didn't want to keep emphasizing social media and forget to remind you that I run a website. That's really where most of my work is. So be sure to visit there. I also wanted to remind you that at the end of the year, I will be doing a non-Disney World related question episode. And if you want to ask any questions like that, I've had some people call some in, then it can be about business. It can be about the background of starting a website. It can be about whatever it is that's not necessarily Disney World related. Feel free to call it in. The information on how to do that is in the show notes using the SpeakPipe website or app. And just anytime between now and say mid-December, I'll be collecting those to do an episode at the end of the year. So today I wanted to talk about my best planning advice. And if you follow me very closely, which some people do, you may have heard all of these things in different places, but I know that it's not practical for most people to keep up with the website and the podcasts and Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and, you know, every source of everything. It's hard to do it. So I wanted to just sort of compile some of my best advice into this one episode. So if you hadn't heard it before, now you can. And this is different than quick tips. I mean, some of these may have appeared as quick tips at some point, but these are really like strategies that I think everyone can benefit from. So I want to sort of walk through those today. And at the end, I will have news, quick tip of the day, and a featured company. So let's dive in. First of all, my first bit of planning advice is to make sure that you get your most difficult dining reservations and FastPass Plus reservations first. So what I mean by that is if you are logging on exactly when your dining reservations and your FastPass Plus open up, which is at midnight Eastern time for FastPass Plus, 60 days ahead of time if you're staying on site, 30 days offsite, or for dining, it is 180 days in advance at 6 a.m. Eastern time. You will often have, you know, a list to get through and you're really hoping that you can get all your reservations. And sometimes people will do chronological order for those, which I understand why you would want to do that. But a better strategy is to go for the most difficult reservations first. And so I know that if you've never been or if you're kind of new to planning, you may not know what the most difficult reservations are, but I'll quickly tell you that beer guest is always going to be first. And then followed by any kind of character meals, those would be the next priority for the most part, especially if you're trying to get character meals at prime times, like in the parks before they open, or like, you know, prime dinner times, like at six or so, like those spots are likely to book up. But so character dining would be after Be Our Guest, and then most other things will fall after that. But book it in that order, not in the order of the days of your trip. And the same goes for FastPass Plus. Speaking of that, FastPass Plus, the only really difficult FastPass Plus reservations to get are Anna and Elsa and Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. Those are the only ones that really matter when you log on, you know, as soon as your window opens. And I will even go one step further and say that most people who get these, particularly Anna and Elsa, are the ones staying on site. So it becomes even more key. The only people getting Anna and Elsa FastPass Plus are not only staying on site, but people who jump to the end of their trip to get it, not at the beginning. So if you have a whole, you know, 1 week trip and you're hoping to get on an Elsa for your second day, your chances are very slim. My suggestion is to go all the way to the end of your trip, get that on an Elsa FastPass Plus, and then go back and get the others for the other days of your trip. Seven Dwarfs Mine Train is the second most difficult. Everything else is pretty easy to get. I'm not going to tell you that you could wait till the next day to get it for sure, because it kind of depends. But most people will be completely fine logging on the next day or, you know, even several days later to get every other FastPass Plus except for those two. If you are staying offsite, or if you are not booking 60 days ahead of time and you want those two fast passes, my suggestion is that you watch the DIB site, which is a site that has current FastPass Plus availability. And I'll include a link to that in the show notes. I've mentioned that site a few times. And they will just show openings that have popped up so that you can see, oh, look, Simon and Elsa's just opened up. So now I can go snag it, even though I wasn't on it 60 days or I'm staying off site. And that particularly is likely to happen when park hours get extended. So if Magic Kingdom is slated to open, you know, be open 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. and then Disney changes the park hours, so now it's open till 11 p.m. midnight, that also means FastPass Pluses open up. So pay attention to those park hours and know that a few days after those park hours changes are made, then FastPass Plus is likely to open up and that'll give you another opportunity. But I'm just being real with you. The only people getting them way in advance are the people staying on site who jump to the end of their trip and get it. That's it. Next up is to plan dining based on where you'll be. And this is sort of part of my planning process. You know, I have that six-step planning process, which I have talked about maybe ad nauseum if you're tired of hearing about it. But the reason that I put them in that order is that I want you to figure out where you're going to be and then choose your dining, because it's so tempting to hear about a great character meal or your friend says, oh, I ate at that place, you have to eat there. And so you go to do it without realizing the logistics of it. And the logistics of Disney World are complicated sometimes, particularly if you're traveling between resorts, and it's big, 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 really big. So you need to figure out where you're going to be and then choose dining based on that. The only exception to this rule for me is if you're planning your trip on short notice, then I suggest that you find what dining is available, because that's going to be a challenge for you if you're getting close to your dates. Figure out what dining reservations are open and then make your daily plan sort of based on that. So that's the only time I suggest sort of changing that order. But just believe me, I'm saving you a bunch of time. If you do plan on dining that's not where you're going to be, please consider driving your own car or taking taxis or Uber or something like that. Don't rely on Disney transportation. It'll take forever to get around. The next tip, planning advice that I want everybody to think about is that when you show up to an attraction and you are there to use a FastPass Plus that you have booked, if the standby line is short, and I mean 10 minutes short or so, don't waste a FastPass Plus on that attraction, because the standby line is maybe even going to be quicker because those people don't have to stop and scan their magic bands to get on the ride. So my advice is to get in the standby line and then get your phone out and change that FastPass Plus to something else. You can always change a FastPass Plus as long as you haven't used it and it's not expired. And then you can, you know, maximize your FastPass Plus. One place I've seen this a lot is Star Tours. And I do recommend Star Tours for FastPass Plus, you know, it's one good choice of at Hollywood Studios. But sometimes, depending on the time of year, you might get to Star Tours with your FastPass Plus, and it does say 10 minutes. But other times you might get there and it says, you know, 40 or more. And so it's hard to sort of, I still recommend it, but I do recognize sometimes of year that line actually might be pretty short. So it would be kind of a waste to, you know, scan your band and use it when the standby line would have been just as fast. So I just highly recommend doing that from your phone so that you can get a fast pass for something else. My next bit of advice is to plan your touring plans by hour for the morning, and then after lunch, leave it open for the rest of the day. Now, this is how my touring plans on the site are set up, and I'll link to those in the show notes. And the reason for this is that the people that I know that have been the most successful have done this because it's a great combination of structure and flexibility. Because you got things basically grouped the first part of the day, by hour, so you roughly know how much you can fit in, but also you're hitting the things that where the lines grow the fastest. You're hitting those first. And then the rest of the day, you can go do things where lines are not as big of a deal, like shows or shopping or whatever it is that you want to. You can use FastPass Pluses in the afternoon. I know some people have told me that they prefer minute-by-minute touring plans, but I will tell you that I don't get negative trip reports very often. And I would be open to that. If people said, listen, I've read and listened to you and I didn't have a good trip, I would look at that as a learning experience, but it doesn't happen hardly ever. But there was one person who emailed me for months before his trip, and his plans were laid out by the minute. I mean, get off the plane at this time, pick up my luggage here, board the bus to the resort at this time, and check in into our room at this time. I mean, his entire trip was laid out minute by minute by minute. And lo and behold, when he came home, he emailed me about his trip and said he was disappointed things didn't go like that. And that's just life. I mean, you cannot plan things minute by minute. And so that's why I like grouping things by hour, because it allows flexibility. And I feel like minute by minute plans become about hitting your mark like you're in a production, as opposed to being flexible enough to have fun. I really like the idea that if you really like a ride and it doesn't have a line, you could ride it again. Or if someone really has to go to the bathroom, then you can do that without feeling like you're going to mess up your touring plans for the whole day. And so this is my recommendation, and it is my experience that people are the most successful when they set their touring plans up in this structure. So that is my suggestion. And I think that will kind of wrap up my planning advice. I do want to get into some news that popped up this week. First of all, Disney announced a new premium package that is for people who are attending the Halloween party. It's called Happy Hallowishes Dessert Premium Package. And the basic gist of this is if you have a Halloween party ticket, then you can also purchase this special package, which will give you seating for the Halloween parade and then a Halloween-themed version of the fireworks dessert party, which takes place at Tomorrowland Terrace restaurant, which gives you not only desserts and drinks to have, non-alcoholic drinks to have, but a great view of the fireworks. And it costs $69 for adults and $39 for ages 3 to 9. So this is a special, they started premium packages last year. I am not generally a fan of premium packages because I don't feel like you should have to pay to get into the party and then spend hours of, I mean, literally this would be like 2 or 3 hours of your 5-hour party on this package, effectively doubling the cost of the party. So I'm not a fan of that, but if you've been before and you think this sounds like a nice way to sort of upgrade your next experience, then go for it. But if you've never been and you're wondering if you should do it, my opinion is no, that you should not do it. Really not necessary, and you can watch the parade and fireworks without it, without a problem. One thing that also happened kind of at the same time, and this is my second point, is that table service restaurants had openings that popped up on Halloween party nights. Now, what's interesting about that is that parties have, like the Halloween and Christmas parties at Magic Kingdom, have never had table service restaurants open. They just had quick service. So when the table service restaurants opened up, not only is that an interesting fact because it's never happened, but it also opened up a lot of reservations. Now, I don't generally recommend that you sit down at a table service restaurant during a 5-hour party that you paid to get into, but there were a lot of people that were able to snag dining reservations for Cinderella's Royal Table, Be Our Guest, Crystal Palace, that they weren't previously able to get. So I'm really happy for them. But generally, it's not, you know, for me, a good use of time to sit down in a restaurant. But some people were very successful and happy that they were able to snag it because it opened up. So that's something to look for if you previously were unable to get them. The third thing I just wanted to mention is that the current bounce back offer is for free dining. Now, if you've never heard of a bounce back offer, it's basically a promotion that you can get when you're at Disney World in a Disney World Resort room. And they give you this offer if you book before you leave. You book your next trip while you're still at Disney World, basically. Often these appear in a folder that is on in your room. I never have these folders. I think they just know I'm going to be back, so they just don't give me the folders. But anybody staying on site can dial extension 8844 and hear the current bounce back offer. It's not a randomly chosen thing. It's not only special guests get this. It's everyone can get it by calling that number, even if you don't have the folder in your room that has the printed version of it. And currently, the bounce back offer is for free dining, and there's a week available, like May 31st, you know, a week and a week after that. And then in early fall, I think going through October, early October, something like that. And my understanding is that this bounce back offer should be available through Halloween. I believe I've got my dates right on that. There usually are bounce back offers available, but free dining tends to be the most popular offer, you know, anywhere, anytime. And so I wanted to point that out to you. If you are going within the next couple of months and interested in booking a return trip, you might want to take advantage of free dining. And when you're there, you just have to put down a deposit for your next trip. You don't have to, you know, pay for the whole thing or anything. It's just a deposit. So anyway, something to look forward to, or if you're going in the next couple months. My next thing is just going to be rumors, and I'm calling them rumors because it's not news unless it comes from Disney or from multiple sources, in my opinion. So this is from one well-placed source, and I just wanted to pass this on to you. Hopefully this will come to you as actual news on a future podcast episode. But one of the things is that Frozen Fun seems like it's going to be extended. It's currently only planned through September 7th, but my source says that it's going to be extended for quite a while. And so hopefully Disney will actually announce that soon. The next thing is that One Man's Dream is closing at Hollywood Studios. They've already removed Walt's office from One Man's Dream, and they are taking it, or have taken it, to the Walt Disney Family Museum in San Francisco. And supposedly, One Man's Dream, the rest of it, is going to be moved somewhere else at Disney World. Not sure where exactly. The closure is not too surprising because that whole section is going to be part of Toy Story Land, and so they have to start closing things to get ready to work on that. But anyway, so One Man's Dream is closing. And thirdly, there's supposedly going to be some changes to Great Movie Ride coming over the next few weeks. Turner Classic Movies is a sponsor of that attraction, and I think that more things are going to be happening because of that sponsorship. And so we'll just have to sit tight and see what pops up. I think that's going to wrap it up for news for this week. My quick tip today is about parades at Magic Kingdom. One thing that is interesting to me is that people often ask me how far ahead of time I line up for parades. And the answer is I don't. I do not believe in waiting for a long time for anything, except apparently D23, where I waited for 5 hours for sessions to begin. But parades, I don't line up for at all. I really, you know, they start and I find a spot. And the reason that I think a lot of people line up is that they just see other people doing it. So particularly on Main Street, where all the parades go through, you'll see people lining up, like sitting in their place, and then other people see them and they think, oh, well, I have to line up. And, you know, they're waiting for like 60 minutes, 90 minutes, often if it's in the daytime and the hot sun, and I'm not going to do that. So I tend to watch the parades at the end of their route and not on Main Street. All parades start at the back of the park in the Frontierland area and then go to the hub in front of the castle and then end at the front. The only one that doesn't do that is Main Street Electrical Parade, which is the nighttime parade at Magic Kingdom. It starts at the front of the park and then goes to the hub and then to Frontierland. It's the same route, but just in reverse. And so for the parades that start at the back, you know, like, for instance, the Festival of Fantasy parade starts at 3 o'clock. And so I will often just show up at the train station at the front of the park at 3 o'clock. And the parade is at the back of the park at that point. But, you know, 20 minutes later, it's at the front of the park. So, you know, you could do that, something like that. If you're watching Main Street Electrical Parade, you could watch at the front if you want a quick exit, but you could also find a spot in Frontierland. Main Street is really going to be the most congested and the place where people are most likely to camp out way ahead of time, but it just doesn't work for me. And so I wanted to pass that on to you because I don't want you to see people lining up and think that you have to do that, because the fact is that you don't. So that's my quick tip of the day about Magic Kingdom parades. So I wanted to talk today about a feature company and also give you a bit of history about how this relationship developed. So today's feature company is Key to the World Travel, which is the travel agency that I work with. So 2.5 years ago, I started working with Cheryl Corin, who is the agent, and she's still my main contact. And we started working together. We were both relatively small, and we have grown together. She is now co-owner of Key to the World, and she no longer solely handles all of the quote requests that come from my site to her. And we planned this for years. We have talked about this for a long time because we both knew that one person wasn't going to be able to handle it. So one of my fears when I sort of started working with the travel agency was that other partnerships with websites that are, you know, website and agency together, they will just say, I recommend this agency, period. And when you send off your quote request to them, and I've tested this out to see how it worked, you never know who you're going to get. So you might get somebody with one trip under their belt and 2 weeks experience, and you might get somebody with 20 years experience and 50 trips. You just don't know. And so I didn't want that to happen with me. I thought, if I'm going to recommend an agency, I need to know my readers are being taken care of. So the arrangement that we have with Key to the World is that there is a hand-picked group of agents, and they are the only ones authorized to work on anything that comes from me. So if you go directly to Key to the World, you could have any Key to the World agency. If you go through me and through the quote request form that is on my site, you get just the hand-picked group many of whom I know, and it does include Cheryl, but many of whom I know, and I'm going to, the ones I don't know, I'll be meeting in person, but they all do a really great job. And if there's any miscommunication or if there's any issues or anything, we handle it and people are always taken care of. So I just wanted to wholeheartedly recommend them because I know that you'll be taken care of if you want an agent for your trip. I think that will wrap up this episode of WW Prep to Go. For more information on the show, you can go to your app, your podcast app, or wwwprepschool.com/episode 104. Until next time, I'll see you on the site.